Good morning. I'd like to introduce our next guest. Bill Harlan is VP of Marketing for ERI. He's responsible for corporate communications, product management, and applications engineering. He, in previous life, worked for Harris, Broadcast Electronics, and Andrew Corp. Please welcome Bill Harlan.
Good morning, everybody. Hey, that's, have you ever had a Zoom call go absolutely perfect? Good morning, it's nice to be back in Madison and speaking at the broadcast clinic again. After all this digital this morning, I was happy to be the only analog thing here. That's okay. I'm fine. You guys always schedule me just before lunch anyway. Hey, this is working. Hi. Everyone great? Okay. Let's hope that's not the highlight. Hi, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm going to spend this bit this morning before lunch talking about filters for FM broadcast systems. This happens to be my favorite part about working at ERI, is I get to play with filter systems all day long. We use filter systems for IM suppression and channel combining. The FCC rules 73.317 outlines the emissions mask for FM, and of course the idea is to keep intermodulation products from occurring that not only occur within the FM band but also can occur at low band VHF and in aviation navigation frequencies. In general, for most full-service broadcast facilities, the rules specify that beyond 600 kilohertz of your assigned frequency, all spurs must be attenuated by at least 80 dB below the carrier. There's a formula in the rules which calculates that based on your transmitter power output. But this applies to the 80 dB rule and basically applies to anything 5 kilowatts or over. Over the years, we started out using notch filters initially. The notch filters pass all frequencies and reject one frequency. They're optimized generally to pass one frequency, and they always reject one. The advantage of a notch filter is it's the insertion loss of a notch filter is very, very low. They have very high power handling capability because they're not dissipating much energy because they're only removing one single frequency. But they've fallen out of favor in the last 20 years, primarily because they're only good for one frequency. So if you're co-located with one other station, if another station comes along, you either have to add another notch filter or pull the notch filter out and replace it with a bandpass filter. So pretty much when you go to a site now, all you see are bandpass filters, and they pass one frequency and reject all others. The other part of that is that these kinds of things have become a greater requirement because, number one, there are a lot more, since 80-90s, there are a lot more full-service FMs than there used to be. And there's also all kinds of secondary FM services that are also crowding into the spectrum. And we all know this because basically you can't DX on the FM band anymore. So you have all these LPFM and FM translator facilities rebroadcasting everything from AM radio stations to HD2s. And of course, I also wanted to mention that with bandpass filters, the thing that comes into play that we used to not think about before HD is now you have to pay a lot of attention to group delay variations. So if you've got a tight four-pole filter that's tuned very tightly for, say, two stations that are co-located that are only 800 kilohertz apart, you can end up with significant group delay over the passband of one or both channels. So in general, these are the three configurations we deal with most often here in the US. You can find two-section filters, that is, two-cavity filters in some instances. They're very popular in Europe. You don't see them much here because generally the band is so crowded that pretty much the majority of filter requirements are for four-section filters because they're going into applications where the frequency spacing between the channels you're trying to deal with is less than 2 megahertz. So in general, these are our ERI's design rules when we're talking about bandpass filters for IM suppression or for channel combining. If we've got 2 megahertz or more spacing between the channels, we use three-section filters. If it's less than 2 megahertz, then we use a four-section filter. And if it's 1.2 megahertz or less, we use a four-section filter, but we add a non-adjacent coupling loop, which is that piece of transmission line that hooks the first cavity to the last cavity. And what that does for you is it adds a notch. This notch, if you look at the center on the lower left, the lowest trace, that adds two notches on each side of the passband. And what that allows us to do is loosen up the filter's tuning in the passband to improve its group delay performance. So, and of course, these are reflective filters. If you're talking about a constant impedance, you take two of those filters and put them together into a constant impedance configuration. So for a three-section filter, there'd be six cans, not just three. So we ship 25 or 30 systems that use this type of system a year. So you've got two or three or possibly four FM channels that are combined into a common FM antenna. So you use two, three, or four section reflective filters, and they're combined with a coaxial T that basically uses a half wavelength multiple to reject one frequency and send it out the T so that both channels are combined. Or a manifold configuration, which uses a series of T's, and those are generally limited to three or four channels. The pros of taking this approach is they provide good isolation between the frequencies. There's a consistent insertion loss and group delay over each channel that's in the frequency, and they're compact physically and relatively low cost compared to a constant impedance system. The negatives of these systems are that input return loss is dependent on the match of the antenna and transmission line hooked at the output of the filter. And of course, these are reflective, so when out-of-band energy hits the filter, either coming back from the antenna or from the transmitter, it's reflected back to the source. We'll talk about with the issues there later in this presentation. So constant impedance filters. Constant impedance filters were universally used in combining systems, particularly when we were using tube-type transmitters. The benefit of a constant impedance over reflective filters is you put the two reflective filters into a hybrid ring, and the hybrids compensate for load variations. So as you get icing on the antenna, and the match changes between the antenna and the filter system, any reflected energy is dissipated in either the individual reject loads at each combiner input or in the system ballast load, which is used to terminate the broad port. Of course, constant impedance filters, because you have the hybrids and the two reflective bandpass filters, are physically larger than a reflective filter. And they're more expensive because you've got the additional filter and the hybrids on each side. As a way of benefits, if you want to go beyond three or four channels, then a constant impedance system basically allows you to combine an unlimited number, virtually unlimited number. In a practical matter, you beyond 20 is it becomes difficult from a power handling standpoint. But we've built systems that have as many as 19 systems in a single with a single antenna. So it's simple two-station FM combined system. Dozens of these are shipped every year with a simple FMT combiner. In this case, this particular system is combining 103.1 and 104.9. In this system, it's using an 8-bay diplexed rototiller antenna. With a rototiller, you can tune it for multiple frequencies, and what you do there is you have some additional rigid line at the input to the antenna. In this case, we use 200 feet of rigid line. And then we use secondary slug packs in that line to optimize the match of both the antenna and transmission line system to all the frequencies that are using the system. In this system, total transmission line run was 580 feet, so we made up the balance of the run with a 4-inch semi-flexible line. And that's into a T combiner. This is using a 3 1/8-inch combining T, so the combined output there is less than 35 kilowatts. So with a 2 or 3-station combined system using reflective filters, again, you've got a simple, low-cost system. It delivers excellent performance. It has a long, useful life. In most of these cases, they utilize standard full or half-wave spaced rototiller FM antennas. It's a simple, proven, field-proven technique to use the multi-slug tuning to optimize the match and minimize VSWR. But the overall system return loss and match relies on the FM antenna and its transmission line match at the combiner output. In this case, the antennas pictured here, the upper one is a 6-bay antenna. This is for Midwest Communications in Terre Haute, Indiana, with a T combiner. That particular antenna is mounted on a lambda that's atop of a 495-foot tower that we built for them last summer. The lower antenna, those are three separate aux antennas that are on the vertical bridge master system that they put up on South Mountain in Phoenix. Those three 4-bay rototillers, two of them are handling two stations each that are diplexed into the system, and then there's a single bandpass filter and a single channel that's in the third antenna. The main system for that is a 5-station constant impedance combiner that's into a 16-bay axiom, which is mounted at the top of that self-supporting tower. So now we get into some larger systems. This is a 10-station FM system that I don't even remember where we built this for, but this is it uses a cogwheel antenna. It's a 12-bay antenna. The antenna, the bay-to-bay spacing is 120 inches, so the cogwheel itself is 120 feet tall. In this case, the system was designed for a minus 10 dB CHD, if you're combining those 10 stations into a single chain, you end up with a combined voltage of both the analog and the digital. The peak RF voltage at the combiner output is over 21 kilovolts. So that substantially exceeds what you can put into a 6 1/8-inch 50 ohm line. So the brute force way to address that is at the last few hybrids there, you'll notice that on the last half, the hybrids have jumped up in size. They've gone to a high voltage hybrid that we do. It's our model HY248. The U-links between the modules have gone from 6-inch to 9-inch. And so, if you want to give yourself a heart attack, get a quote for a 4 back-to-back 9-inch elbows. And then the way we deal with that, because running a 9-inch line up the tower is from an economic standpoint somewhat difficult. And the other thing is building an antenna where a single input and power divider system could handle that kind of power even after the transmission line loss is difficult. So what we do in this 12-bay antenna is we split the antenna feed system into upper and lower 6-bay halves, and we feed each one with 6-inch 50-ohm line. But to get there, then what you need is a power divider, and because you've got the two runs, we try and create some redundancy, although the redundancy is limited because you can't run the power into the upper half and have somebody working on the lower half. So you have a roughly $110,000 power divider with a 7-port patch panel that takes the combiner output and may or may not split it 50-50 between the upper and lower halves because you may want to add null fill. So that may cause an asymmetrical power split. So all of this has become problematic since we quit doing minus 20 dBCH state. So that's, in fact, what I spend most of my time on is doing voltage calculations to figure out how we'll do a combiner system and an antenna feed system. So this is the simple, straightforward way that we did things back in analog, and now with HD, it's gotten infinitely more complicated. And so we go on back 20 years when we used to have, when we implemented HD, but we didn't have common mode amplified transmitters. So you had a separate HD transmitter and a separate analog transmitter. And back in the olden days, I used to give 6-hour seminars at Harris about how to implement HD. And one of the things we talked about was reverse fed combining. And so you have a constant impedance combiner system. And with a constant impedance combiner system, generally you think of having the system terminating with a ballast load. The signal cascades down at the output of each module, and the combined analog output appears at the final module, and you send that to a patch panel or directly to the antenna, depending on the power level. This block diagram is a block diagram of the way the West Tiger 1 system in Seattle was originally constructed. And we retrofitted that system for reverse-fed HD. So, when you did reverse-fed HD, what you would do is you would remove the termination load from the input side of the combiner system, and you would replace that with a circulator. And a circulator is a ferro-resonant device, and what it would do is it created a clockwise motion. And so when you fed the digital transmitter into one side through that clockwise motion, it would go into the input port of the hybrid. And since it was on the opposite side from the analog, it would combine going in the opposite direction of the constant impedance of the analog signal and the constant impedance combiner. So the analog combined signal would be at the output where it was traditionally, but where the broad port was would be your combined digital signal. And any energy that came back to the narrowband port, the circulator had a third port on it, and the clockwise rotation of the ferro-resonant device would send any reflected power to the reject load, and that would replace the reject load and terminate that port of the hybrid. And these systems are actually still in use in several cities around the United States. And they were either built brand new or retrofitted to do this. It was, as long as you were only dealing with 1% minus 20 dBC, it was a very reliable and simple, and what was more important at the time, the most efficient way to combine analog and HD, because the alternative was to use a 10 dB hybrid and burn up 90% of your digital power into the reject load that terminated the isolated port of the 10 dB hybrid. It came time for us to build the Empire State Building master antenna for the auxiliary. The reason this system was built was because the assumption was, at the time the repack started, was that the top of the Empire State Building to do the FCC repack of the television channels would require that the main FM antenna at the Empire State Building, which has 16 radio stations on it, would have to cease operations during the day. And the problem with the broadcasters ceasing operations during the day is they had nowhere else to go in most cases. But that was a critical requirement because the Empire State Building's largest source of revenue is the observation deck. And the observation deck, when you are running on the auxiliary Alford antenna, is radiated actually above above the occupational level. So in order to do something like rebuild the television apertures on the Empire State Building would require shutting down the Empire State Building main FM antenna probably for months. So there was a shootout and several companies competed and we were fortunate enough to be awarded an auxiliary antenna that is built immediately above the dome on the Empire State Building. In other words, at the base of the structure. So in the Empire State Building, there are three ERI master FM antennas. There's what we call the main FM master antenna, and that was the original antenna that was put up and commissioned in the early 90s. And that has it started out with 12 radio stations on it. It had 16 on it today. And then immediately below that is a single bay antenna, which is called the Mini Master. And the Mini Master was an antenna that was put up in 2006. And that has the legacy FMs on it. So it has what used to be CBS FM, WABC FM, and WNBC FM back in the old days. And that is that single layer. And then immediately next to that, just below that, is an auxiliary antenna for that. So at the bottom, we were to build a new aux antenna. So the way that system is designed is we've got a three-bay antenna, and it is dual-fed too, but unlike a reverse-fed analog and digital system, it's not, the digital side isn't low power. It's built so it can handle equal power and voltage compared to the analog side. And so what that allows us to do is rather than using a power divider to split a very high amount of power at the base of the transmission line run, you can deal with two separate combiner chains, and that makes everything a lot easier to confront. The other benefit is when you're using a power divider, since you're feeding a common array, then you've got two separate transmission lines. You need to phase those lines so that everything's in phase when it gets to the antenna input. So when you're doing that with two separate combiner chains or two separate signals, it doesn't matter what the phase relationship is between the two individual lines feeding the antennas, and operation at dissimilar power levels is not an issue. So as I mentioned, since the FM auxiliary on the Empire State Building is at the base of the tower, it had to be a design that minimized downward radiation. So we used an N-1/N array that optimized the downward radiation. And actually what it did compared to the main antenna is the main antenna has a big first null. It makes the whole radiated pattern much nicer than actually the main antenna. So this is, when you compare this approach to what I showed you originally two slides ago, by breaking that into, instead of a single chain of 10 radio stations, into two chains of five, you get the combined analog or average power of the coming out of the system, both analog and digital, and the combined peak voltages to be within what the power handling capability of 6 1/8-inch 50-ohm line. So by taking this approach, it's a significant reduction in the system's combined average power and peak RF voltages in terms of how much each transmission line has to hand, or how much is at the combiner output. It eliminates a very expensive patch panel and power divider and the 9 3/16 inch components from the system. You don't need to worry about phased transmission lines anymore as you would with a traditional power divided combined system. And it really, by feeding both inputs of the antenna, you're utilizing all of the antenna and hybrid, the integrated hybrid's full average power and voltage handling capacity. Now, let's talk about some of the issues with doing this. As we all know, particularly up here in Wisconsin, and for those here from Minnesota, an FM antenna does not always operate in the ideal environment. So you have, in most FM designs, you have a hybrid, and that's what feeds the left slant and right slant dipoles. And that hybrid has a 90-degree phase relationship, which is what actually creates the circular polarization. So in general, when we're talking about a hybrid, an element hybrid has a minimum isolation specification. It doesn't matter whose it is, it's 30 dB if you're talking about optimizing it for the entire FM band. If you're only optimizing the hybrid for a single frequency, you can do better than that. But when we're talking about a big master antenna, ideally you want to be able to pass 88 to 108. And when you put all that together into a complete system where you've got multiple hybrids, multiple elements, multiple power dividers, and interbay transmission line, in general, what you can achieve on a practical level once it's installed is around a 25 dB isolation across the band. And as I mentioned, the environment has a big impact. When the antenna ices, when you have all of those things have an impact on what the match is and how much isolation you maintain. So this is just some photos of what the dual input panel looks like. This is a box hybrid, and in our antenna design, that hybrid is integrated immediately on the back of each element. And so you end up, because of the hybrid, you have some low-level coupling between the right-hand and left-hand CP polarized signals, because by feeding both sides of the hybrid, whatever you feed into one port is going to come out right-hand CP, whatever you feed into the other port is going to come out left-hand CP. That matters in television because you're limited in television. Everything must be right-hand circularly polarized. The FM rules do not require that. And it doesn't matter, the receiver doesn't care. But you need to address the coupling, and that's why we use constant impedance combiners in these systems. Because one, the constant impedance combiner from the combiner side and transmitter side, you get compensation for those load variations that occur due to environmental factors, and anything that's reflected back from the antenna doesn't appear at the combiner's output port. It's redirected to the system ballast load or the individual reject loads at each narrowband input of the combiner. So you've got this system which deals with changes in weather conditions, ice on the antenna. And then the other issue is if you use a reflective filter in this system, in this kind of system, then when you get energy reflected back from the antenna, it basically is source-induced multipath. And so I would like to tell you that we were smart and thought of this, but we learned this the hard way by being over optimistic on the isolation. So by putting in the constant impedance combiner, you never have to worry about any reflected signal causing degradation in your primary signal that you want transmitted. The hybrids are also, by being in the system, the hybrids add additional isolation to the overall system, and that's beneficial. And if you've got very high transmitter power levels, obviously a constant impedance system, because constant impedance filters can handle double the power, it's useful for that, particularly with elevated HD levels. And if you want to change frequencies or add frequencies, a constant impedance system is more, it usually accommodates that much more easily. Because in a reflective filter system, the combining T's are actually part of the circuit that combine, the electrical circuit that combines the two signals. So when you want to change out a T combiner for a three-channel combiner, you actually have to redo all of the T's to make that work. So there, I just, since I brought this dual feed system in, I also wanted to share with you another thing you can do with this. An interesting requirement we had several years ago, or 5 years ago now, was we had a request for a master FM system, and the issue was that three of the stations that wanted to use the system were all non-directional, and there was one in station that their main facilities needed to be directional. And they happen to be, this is in the Northeast, so they happen to be in a location where everybody could move and maintain their current power levels. So we took this reverse feed approach and proposed a combined system which used the clockwise or right-hand input of the combiner as non-directional, and the counterclockwise or left-hand CP input as a directional. And so by having the right-hand polarization inputs fed with equal power levels on each curtain of the three-curtain array, we got a non-directional signal. And then for the left-hand CP input, we actually changed the feed system and phased it so that we got the directional pattern that was required. And this was a little critical because the directional facility was WTOP-FM, so when you're messing around with the number one billing radio station in America right now, that's something to pay attention to. So this was a system that we built for WAMU at American University. It's a master system. First wanted to point out the differences in those plots there is the non-directional plots. It's our custom at ERI. We plot that relative field scale on a two to one. It's 2.0. It's a double. So the outer circle on that is a 2.0 relative field, and we do that so that you can see where it goes above the 1.0, just to give a truer representation of what the omnidirectional pattern looks like. The pattern on the left there is the WTOP-FM directional antenna on the left-hand CP input, and that's plotted to a normalized scale of 1.0. And this is all four stations. So the four stations in there, you'll see the reserve band stations, WAMU, WPFW, and WETA. Because they're lower in lower frequencies, the cogwheel or the 1180 and the 1180 element tend to, on the vertical polarization, those tend to be a little higher directivity than they get mid-band, where you get to WTOP, where it's much more of a circle. And so from there, we're just going to move into the filter discussion that I teased about. One of the issues we constantly run into is space. So this is the space that you would like for your nine-station FM channel combiner system. This is the Senior Road facility in Houston. So you've got this beautiful basement, lower floor that's built into a hill, and you've got a loading dock, and it's just this wonderful big laid out space specifically for the combiner, and there's plenty of room for everything. And so you can clean out the whole room and put in the new combiner, and it all fits quite easily, including these switches that are shown in the drawing here in the lower right-hand corner. The box there on the left is the analog two-way power divider that splits the power, the combined power, analog power to feed the upper and lower halves of the antenna. That has enough power that it's a 9-inch system, and that's using three motorized switches that we got from a Macedonian manufacturer. They're 9 3/16-inch motorized switches, and with three of them, they're because the site manager didn't want to have to leave his house to switch from the upper and lower half of the antenna if he had an icing event using manual patch panels. He wanted to be able to do that remotely. So this, as opposed to a patch panel, you've got motorized switches on both the analog, and this was built back in 2004. So it's got a split feed system where you're reverse feeding the HD. So in general, when we are told to do a big combiner, this is the space we end up with. So we were somewhat conscious of thinking about doing something. We've wrestled with our medium power filters for some years now on making them compact. So at NAB this year, we introduced the new 940, which is a four-section FM bandpass filter. It's replacing our 955, which is a modular filter. First of all, in these low power applications, we ship so few three-section filters that we decided that from a manufacturing standpoint, it was actually more cost-effective to build a four-section filter. And if you don't need the four-section performance, we just tune it looser so you get the lower insertion loss, but we don't have to build a completely different model filter. So it's actually less expensive to build a four-section filter than it would be to have two different types. And the four-section filter in that box, it's a folded design, so you get a full four-section bandpass filter with non-adjacent coupling that fits in a footprint that's 17 inches by 21 inches. So it's a substantial improvement over the existing design. So you've got a cross-coupled, high-rejection, four-pole filter. It uses the same bellows temperature compensation technology that we use in all of our other FM filters and our UHF and VHF filters. 3/16 outer casing, so you don't get any of the oil can effect from heating and cooling. It's equipped with 1 5/8-inch flanged or unflanged inputs and output connections. And then, as I said, you can tune it to different bandwidth requirements. The only thing that changes as you change the tuning is the insertion loss and group delay. And we can tune it to one frequency, and if down the road it needs to be tuned to another frequency, that can be done by one of our field service guys in less than half a day. And we've actually, and these are the constant impedance versions. Again, you end up with a constant impedance four-section filter that's 42 inches by 24 inches. And depending on the hybrid at the output, on the output side, it can handle anywhere from 10 to 20 kilowatts. And we've also actually taken an order, built one, and shipped it. This is for DMS broadcasting in the Cayman Islands. This system, we shipped them an 8-bay Axiom Master FM antenna a few years ago with a 3-channel manifold combiner. And so they are adding 5 radio stations to that. So we expanded that from 3 stations to 8 by adding 5 constant impedance combiner modules at the output of the manifold combiner for a total of 8 stations. This is the Cayman Islands, so you don't need much power there. So at the combined output, it's only 18 kilowatts. And this is just some photos of the filters under construction. And I appreciate your attention. Are there any questions? Thank you.